Aboriginal women are 34 times more likely than non-Indigenous women to end up in hospital because of family violence. This is just one part of what Indigenous health advocates are calling a violence crisis. Josephine Cashman, entrepreneur, lawyer and Indigenous advocate, was part of a discussion at the National Press Club this week.
There is a clear link the Crime Commission found between suicide, self-harm and associated alcohol and substance abuse and domestic violence, relationship breakdowns and early life trauma from child abuse. Service providers and community members are limited in their ability to address mental health issues and identify children at risk.
And it is Indigenous children themselves who are particularly vulnerable, with Indigenous children comprising 30% of suicide deaths among those under 18 years of age. Indigenous 15 to 24-year-olds are also five times as likely to suicide than their non-Indigenous peers. To try and address this issue, the federal government has released a new report titled Solutions That Work, What the Evidence and Our People Tell Us. Nina Copel spoke with Anthony Dillon, lecturer in the Faculty of Health Sciences at the Australian Catholic University, to find out what we can learn from this latest report.
So we know, for example, that when people are in environments where parents are working in meaningful jobs, kids are in school, mental health problems, self-harm, suicide and that sort of thing are less likely to be a problem. But the problem is, for far too many Indigenous people, they live in places where they just don't have access to the sorts of things you and I take for granted.
It's a really difficult, complex problem. Is it best to be dealing with communities as a whole, or should we be dealing with case-by-case situations?
Now, as the report sets it out, they approach us at a few different levels, which is good. So, yes, you do need that individual attention, but you also need approaches at the family and community level as well. So it needs to be a multi-layered approach.
And what would that look like?
It would look like you have people that are being cared for. They're being seen as whole people. And I think most importantly, you would have a situation where suicide is not just dealt with from a crisis point of view. And, you know, we will always need a crisis intervention, a crisis level. But when you fix a lot of the problems upstream, you fix them before they become suicide issues. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think one of the things that came up in the report was cultural security and appropriateness. So is that something that you could address in schools even?
Look, each person, each community is different. Sometimes culture can be important. Ideally, families should be taking care of culture themselves. So again, I think if you have families where there's one parent working, they're in a safe, stable home, well, then healthy culture will just be a natural outcome of that. You know, personally, I don't think classes and programs in culture should be the frontline treatment. Basically, the sort of culture Aboriginal people need is the same sort of culture you and I and the authors of the report have. So that's, you know, access to modern services, safe environments, that sort of thing.
And this idea of empowerment that you've brought up, that the report brought up, what does that mean in the context of looking after people's psychological and physical health?
Okay. It means that you can have some choice about what happens in your life, some choice in how you respond. You can't always choose your circumstances, but at least you can have some say in how you can respond. So it's individuals, families and communities making some decisions for themselves. And that could mean that one community choose to go about, you know, a suicide issue slightly differently to another community. They do what feels, what they think is best for them. Certainly there's a common denominator, but there needs to be that variation, you know, at the individual and community levels.
So if we are talking about empowerment and about each community making the decision for themselves about what would work best, is there anything that the government from a federal or a state level actually can be doing?
Yes, I think government can. Look, the big issue is basically you've either got to have services come to the people or people go to the services in the case of some remote communities where it's just not viable to set up modern services. And government have a part to play there. If a service is viable, if a community is sustainable and viable, then government should invest whatever it takes to get that community started up. And if it's not viable, well, then government should pay the bill for sensitively relocating those people to where they do have opportunities.
That's quite hard to achieve, though, in a sensitive way. And when that's done wrong, it can result in huge media outcry. Is there an example where that's been done successfully? Do you know?
Yeah, look, not on a large scale basis. Individuals are making choices to move to where the opportunities are. And so, yes, it does have to be done sensitively. People need to be told about the success stories of people who have made the move and let them know that they will be supported the whole way.
One of the things that came up as well was this idea of employment, which, you know, you've mentioned if a child is in a family with parents who are securely employed, it makes a big difference, and it comes back to that idea of empowerment. Is the government's current policy on generating jobs working, do you think?
Look, that's hard for me to say at this stage. Certainly, we read the success stories about jobs being created and Indigenous people moving into jobs, and we always celebrate that, and that's great. But there are pockets around the country where there just is so few jobs that it's not going to make a big difference at all.
What would you like to see happen in the future? I know that's a big question, but what are the priorities for you?
Okay, the priorities for me would be within the Indigenous population, identify those who are most at risk. And one of the strengths of the report is it doesn't just have a one-size-fits-all. It does recognise that there is diversity among the Indigenous people. So identify those who are most at risk and focus on them initially.
Something interesting that I took from that report, I'm not sure if it was something interesting for you, but the idea that while many consider the process of decolonisation not to be complete, when it started it actually saw, or it coincided with, an increase in suicides. Is that something that we should be considering or taking note of?
Look, for me it's not the highest priority, simply because the solution is never found by digging into the past, okay? Solution is found by focusing on the here and now. And as I said in my response, we are never ever victims of the past, but only ever victims of our view of the past. So yes, certainly acknowledge the past, but the solution is not to be found by focusing on the past. Indigenous people need the same sorts of services you and I have access to. And when they do live in that modern world, they can be just as Indigenous as they were before they embraced that modern world. They don't lose their Indigenous, their Aboriginal status, by embracing modern services. Terms like colonisation, decolonising and that sort of thing, I think that can be a distraction from focusing on what works.